Dr. Paul Ehrlich at Stanford, head of the ecology department, has figured out what we're short is 18 billion trees. Our parents and forefathers, in great love and total abysmal ignorance, have cut down the forest for houses, trees, buildings, hospitals, roads, and everything, and nobody reforested it. There was no Johnny Appleseed. So Jack and I said to ourselves, well, what do we do to get this 18 billion trees planted? If there's currently 6 billion people alive, if everyone plants 3 trees, then we got the 18 billion. So we're saying if you're listening, we're asking you to plant 3 trees. Now, you got a choice. You could do either ornamental, good-to-look-at trees, like a pine tree or something, or a weeping willow, or you could do edible. And I'm saying go to the line of edible. What if you had great plum trees, apple trees, kumquat trees, all kinds of stuff, and that may not fit the climate that you're in, but plant those trees so you can eat, and the largesse you can give to your friends, neighbors, relatives, the homeless, Salvation Army, Goodwill, thrift store. And now why do you plant 3 trees? How do you figure that out? You plant one for being born. One, if you ever plan on dying. Now, some of you have been to Israel, and in Israel, anyone who dies, they plant a tree in his or her memory, and they put a little name tag on it so the tree grows up with a name on it. And then one, if you ever fell in love. Now, if you're a serial lover, we want you to be a serial tree planter. We want you to reforest the planet. And for some of you listening that are that way, just do the whole thing. Because what we're saying is, together, we can plant the trees, save the ecology, change the meteorology, and make the external environment much more of the Garden of Eden again. When I was in Singapore, the guy that really put Singapore together in the last 30 years is Senior Minister Lee. And he's an attorney, and he decided to take his little population now of 2.5 million people, and he said, what could I do to make the most magnificent city in the whole world? And he said, I'm going to make the garden city of the world. So he went to France and saw that they had flowers everywhere. So there's no street anywhere in Singapore that doesn't have flowers year-round, beautiful foliage, great greenery. He says, how can I take my culture, which is illiterate, and make them literate? And 30 years later, 98% of the people graduate college. And every one of the kids has to learn before they're 12. That way you don't get an accent. So if you've got children under 12, get them to be multilingual. The criticism that we get and the joke that they tell is, what do you call somebody that only speaks one language? They go, ha, 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 an American. But every kid there speaks English, Japanese, and Chinese because they think that's the future of the world. And you ask yourself, well, this guy's a dictator and a despot. How has he done? I'll tell you how he's done. He's the number one airport in the world, the number one seaport in the world, the number 4 financial port in the world, and the most educated culture in the world. The reason Singapore made it in the front end was because the most favorable trade winds, anybody going from India to Japan or anywhere in Asia, had a cruise by there. And that's the same thing that happened with England, why they were the capital of the world because of the trade winds. Well, the new trade winds is intellectual commerce. And the day before I was last in Singapore, Bill Gates was there, and every house is outfitted for the internet and the intranet. The whole culture, everybody, is mandated to be digitally tuned in, turned on, and plugged in. That's because they asked bigger questions. I'm saying, ask yourself bigger questions.